Hey there. Ever feel like you just need a break from the day-to-day of work, put on that out of office, and be alongside peers learning from fellow nonprofits and industry experts on what they see working when it comes to fundraising, marketing, growing a monthly giving program, retention, everything that encompasses what you do? Well, if so, I have two events for you to mark down. June 4th and 5th is Donor Perfect's Community Conference Spark. It is for any fundraiser wanting to excel in donor management, program innovation, community engagement, and organizational growth, and it is free. So click the link in the show notes to register. And then an event that I have attended 3 years in a row is the NEO Summit, combining practical, actionable, and very data-informed content with also this really electric and immersive atmosphere. The NEO Summit is more than just a conference. It is a really fun and great place to get away from your desk and innovate your fundraising and accelerate your impact. So you can join hundreds of your fellow nonprofit professionals in Indianapolis in September on the 18th and 19th, and you can save $600 on your ticket right here. It is the lowest price available anywhere. So click the link in the show notes for both of these events. They are incredible. They put on an incredible speaker presentation, all tons of great resources for you. Invest in yourself and the growth of your organization by attending these two phenomenal events.
You know, the poverty rate in America has been the same for 45 years. Hasn't changed. Narrow band, 12%. And what's to me amazing about Homeboy, as I look back and look at this, is that Homeboy has a way of helping people lift them out of poverty, help them heal from their trauma, and then get resilient enough to take on what society throws at them and get a quality job and then move their family forward. That's how you get people out of poverty.
Hey there, you're listening to the Missions to Movements podcast, and I'm your host, Dana Snyder, digital strategist for nonprofits and founder and CEO of Positive Equation. This show highlights the digital strategies of organizations making a positive impact in the world. Ready to learn the latest trends, actionable tips, and the real stories from behind the feed? Let's transform your mission into a movement. Hello, everyone. Today, I have a very special guest that is sitting virtually in front of me, Tom Bozzo. Welcome to the show. He is the current, are you current CEO?
That's correct.
Current CEO of Homeboy Industries. And I am a big fan because as somebody who used to live in Los Angeles, Homeboy is a pretty special spot. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you, Dana. Good to be with you.
Yeah, you have had quite the career. And I want to just rewind for a second. We're going to do the old blockbuster pause and rewind. 11 years ago, you left Aramark. Been contemplating retiring, but you didn't. And you had a very interesting lunch at Homegirl Cafe. Can you take us back to that moment and how that completely shifted kind of the course of maybe what was going to happen to what has?
It's a good question because I think it sort of tees up a lot of about what I've learned about myself and about Homeboy and about a whole different world I never had an exposure to. So before that lunch, I had left Aramark, which is a $13 billion corporation, a corporate officer. My group of businesses I was running was a $2 billion business, and we had 13,000 employees. I say all that for context. Now we're about to spend this time talking about a little nonprofit here in Los Angeles. And so I was a corporate executive. In many ways, I thought I hit the top of my career, did everything I ever wanted to do, successful in the business speak way of thinking about it. Being a corporate executive has a certain shelf life, and I had a yearning to do something more different in my life. I love businesses. I've always loved businesses, and I think well-run companies are good for our society. So as I left Aramark, I was never going to leave the business world aside, but I didn't want to be that guy who spent their whole career just climbing the corporate ladder and going around the country. But I was looking, I had a yearning to do something different. And so a friend of mine who was on the board of Salvation Army with me of Los Angeles invited me down to Homegirl Cafe. And I can still remember that lunch 11 years ago, like it was yesterday. So I'm sitting down at Homegirl Cafe, which is, by the way, we're at Homeboy Industries, where we help former gang members and felons leave that life behind and change their life in a positive way. We do that in the context of a job, and we have businesses. One of our businesses is Homegirl Cafe. That's a cafe run by mostly women, and it's run fully by gang members and felons. And so I remember sitting there with Victor having lunch, and, you know, back to my for-profit world, I had in my businesses acquired 40 companies over the past 10 years. So you got a certain sense for a good workforce is what companies you want to acquire and what companies you want to partner with. But I remember though sitting with Victor having lunch, looking around and looking at the workers and just observing and seeing how they were, you know, heads down, doing a good job. They were smiling at customers.
Did you know the mission of the restaurant when you went
there?
Never
had heard of Homeboy. Although I, you know, Victor said I wanted to sort of bring you down and talk about this nonprofit. Clearly you wanted to get me involved and be on the board. And so I'm looking around and seeing that here's a thriving business. And I'm also realizing back in my corporate job, I would have never hired any one of those folks because they had tattoos on their face, they had criminal records, and they had been part of gangs. So it's like we just never would have hired them. And yeah, I'm seeing that in the context of a job, they're Homeboy's helping these folks move their life forward. And so when Victor asked me to get involved and be on the board, I had done enough work on nonprofit boards. I wanted to really do something different. And I very much admire the folks at the Salvation Army who, you know, dedicate their careers and their life to kind of serving people or without food or without housing. And so I kind of thought, well, do I have that sort of skill set or ability to do? So anyway, I said to Victor, I don't want to be on the board, but I'm willing to volunteer. And because Homeboy had struggling businesses at the time and I was an old guy with gray hair after business experience, I started as a volunteer, but it was only to learn more about how Homeboy really helps people move their life forward. Mm-hmm. That kind of launched me into my Homeboy career.
And when you say at the time they were struggling, like paint that picture, like what did that look like then?
So Homeboy at the time, about $11 million a year nonprofit. 2 years prior, if anybody's living in LA who's hearing this, they'll have remembered that 2 years prior, Homeboy went through a very public near bankruptcy, near running out of money to do its mission. A lot of foundations dove in to help, had funding for a couple of years, but then that money was running low and running out, matter of fact, and the board was concerned about how to move this forward. And so Father Greg and the board decided they need somebody else to kind of help come in and find a way of financially getting on solid footing. And so I've learned, and we'll talk about it, I've learned so much about Homeboy and about life. I just feel lucky they needed somebody like me at that time with those skills I had to come in and help out. And it's the sort of privilege of my life to be part of this community and actually add value by doing something I just know how to do is run businesses.
That's amazing. So when you first started and you said you were going to volunteer, was it in the capacity as an unpaid CEO or was there a different role that was first?
No, it was really in the capacity of volunteer of, well, let me back up. Still to this day, Homeboy is an interesting collection of, we have a set of social enterprise businesses and we're also a human services nonprofit agency. So all the full amount of wraparound services you need to get someone who re-enters back into society from the prison system, you know, case management, navigation, tattoo removal, anger management, substance abuse therapy, all those things we do as well. So we're two things in one legal structure. And so at the time, the businesses were sort of costing too much running relative to the programs. And so they needed somebody to kind of help straighten the ship on the business side. So I started volunteering running the businesses. Okay. Same time Homeboy was going through another financial crunch. A consultant who was working with the board kind of whispered to Father Greg, hey, you might want to ask Tom to come and help out. And so 2 months later, I'm sitting with Father Greg's office and we're chatting and he asks me to come in to be the first CEO of Homeboy he ever had. And I kind of say, well, I'll have to think about it. Now, I don't think many people have ever said no to Father Greg. But to me, I just wanted to make sure, hey, I wanted to do a gut check. Hey,
for sure.
Do I want to go work at a nonprofit? You know, I went from this big time job to now doing this nonprofit work. Do they need somebody with more nonprofit experience than me? Because I'm a for-profit type of guy. Did he want it? Did the board want it? So I went through all those things. And a week later, sat down in his office. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to be in the same orbit with Father Greg for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And so I said, yes. And I say this quite a bit. Again, it kind of reflects on where I was coming from to now. Like, I went into this role with all the hubris of a corporate CEO. I thought, okay, I'll do this for 6 months to a year. I'll straighten them up. I'll move things around and then go off and do something different. And here I am 10 years later, just still loving what we do, helping and moving the organization forward. You know, now we're 3 times the size. We tripled the impact and doing all those things. But it's, oh my gosh, it's been the best chapter of my life.
That's amazing. And I want to dive into all of that. But I think what's actually really interesting, and I did a little thought leadership work with a CEO that retired from a nonprofit recently. And she grew the nonprofit from, I think it was 3 to 25+ million within an 8-year period. And something that she said that I thought was really profound and smart was, it would be really interesting if every for-profit, like Fortune 500 CEO, had to do a year or two of service leading a nonprofit. Mm. Like, you would, as you were exiting your role, if there was like, or in some way, like a sabbatical something in which you took your experience and your skills and you applied them to an organization. I don't know how this would happen. If there's some sort of like application process of which it could happen where Fortune 500 CEOs or high level executives could come and literally share their expertise. What do you think? I mean, coming from that world, and I worked in the for-profit industry too before working with nonprofits. What do you think skills-wise as a leader, like when you first started, were really important for you to the things that you saw maybe differently and then things that you were really working with them on to improve from the get-go?
Yeah, man, there's a lot there. And in fact, I'll do a little self-promotion here. I've learned so much. And so I, even from the first year of being a homeboy, I should write a book about, never go back into the for-profit world, what lessons I would take back to the for-profit world that I learned from working with gang members, right? In a nonprofit sense. And so I wrote the book. It took me 8 years of finally get around to writing the book, but I wrote the book. That was the genesis of that. And it's like, there's so much learning about what you take in the nonprofit world, and about people, and about how you treat people, how do you motivate people, how do you help people. That's really important for the for-profit world to know. Similarly, it is equally as important to take in the best practices of the for-profit world into the nonprofit space. I mean, everything about understanding strategy and tactics, leadership development, you know, organizational design, sort of being clarity of mission, clarity of description of people's jobs, and having those fundamental skill sets are extremely important in both worlds, but the nonprofit world needs to learn more of it from the for-profit world. I was lucky enough, in the for-profit world I was in, Aramark Corporation, we did food services, uniform services, and facility services. So nothing sexy. It's about a service business. How you grow your business is by word of mouth and reputation, but how you get a good reputation is how well they perform their jobs on the front line. So a lot of what I learned in my corporate job was about management development, talent acquisition, talent development, which I've kind of bring in full boat into the nonprofit space. And so I'm really pleased to say now that, you know, that 10 years later, you know, over 2/3 of our management team are former clients, people with lived experience, people who've grown up from being a client to now being a manager in upper level. So that's just something you definitely take out of the for-profit world, which is really beneficial in what a resource-constrained, bandwidth-constrained nonprofit has to have.
Investing back into your people.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. I agree. I agree. That and like the overhead conversation comes up all the time in the nonprofit world, which is not discussed in the corporate world. Nobody cares what the overhead cost it is to make this hair clip or the iPad.
Yeah, right.
But it's so talked about in our sector, which blows my mind. It takes people to do good work.
Yeah, no. And then set back to your point about having nonprofit or having for-profit people kind of do a year or two of service, that'd be great. I mean, there's so much to be learned both ways.
Absolutely.
But I also want to say, like, I'm a big advocate of people coming out of the for-profit world and enter the nonprofit space to help. But you have to have a mindset about it. And particularly in a human services agency, you know, it's about the person, it's about the individual. And so a lot of us who have the jobs and the big time jobs in the for-profit world, we come in with, like I said, hubris and expectations, and we think we know a lot. And what I've come to learn is it's not about wagging your finger at people and telling them exactly what has to get done. It's about being in relationship with them so they can feel positive about who they are and they can move their life forward in a dramatic way.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that because you mentioned, so I was reading, I did some research, Tom.
Yeah, sure.
I read a recent article and you shared the important values that make a huge impact on an organization are kinship, second chances, grace, laughter, and joy, which I love. How do you think each of those are really integrated within Homeboy?
Yeah, those are all the values we have here at Homeboy. And let me say it's been a sort of basic level. Think back about our clients. You know, all our clients who have our gang involvement, we have a very narrow client base defined. That have been incarcerated, jail system or prison system, and have been gang affiliated, right? And so, and what we do at Homeboy is we bring them in. We have about 400 people, clients every day on our payroll. So we pay people to work on themselves essentially. Mm-hmm. If we take the toughest of the tough cases, you know, Father Greg sort of started all these years ago and realized if we're not taking that hardest case out there, no one else is going to take that person.
Right.
So we're helping that person. And so all these people are victims of complex trauma. They don't have a father or and mother who has ever loved them or cared for them. They join a gang thinking it was their family. And that's a false mm-hmm. hope. They get into trouble with the gang. They realize the gang kind of sold them out along the way. They go to prison. They come out. And they don't want to go back to that lifestyle. They want to actually live what they call a normal life. But the draw of the gang is great. Now, we're there on the other side trying to draw them in and lean into their goodness. So what really helps people change is this safety of our organization, but also finally, for the first time, having a positive relationship in their life,
yeah.
trusting relationship that we trust them. I mean, our secret sauce is kinship, love, and non-judgment. You know, people walk through our doors. We don't care the color of their skin, the tattoo on their face, the felony they had. We're going to help them in some sort of way. And so it's really then this community of those values, kinship, not judging, giving a second chance. And really for our folks, it's the first chance they ever had to do something and earn an honest day's wage and then lean forward. And to be clear, it's not a sort of everybody doesn't come in and it's all of a sudden change overnight and it's a straight
up.
It is a two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back along the way. But we do this in a very loving, trusting way, individualized case by case method. And what's remarkable is, and if you anybody's listening, please come visit us. We take a lot of visitors in every year. You would walk in and you would feel the vibe. And there's a lot of laughter and there's a lot of joy, a lot of tears of sorrow. And, you know, people get to express themselves in a really human way versus when they leave our doors, have to go back to their neighborhood, they get to put on that armor that kind of closes everything down. And so laughter is actually, you know, a good tonic for the soul and it helps people through the day.
Absolutely. I love that. Within Homeboy, I know about all the work that you do once they get to you. Is there prevention work done as well?
We stretch the definition of prevention, you know, and let me say it this way, many, like 90% of our folks who come to us are looking to get out of gang life because they don't want their kids to go through the same thing. And so really it's about stopping the generational cycle of violence.
Yep.
We do have a charter high school and we do have a youth reentry program that's more on the reentry side, but it's mostly about rehabilitation.
I was always curious about that as to both sides of that. Okay. Very interesting. Thank you. You did mention earlier, which I want to talk about, and quote me if I'm wrong, 15 million Homeboy Ventures and Jobs Fund. And you did mention triple the size of the organization from when you got there. Now, listeners might look at this or hear this and say, like, that'll never be us. That could never happen. Like, what contributed, do you think, were the success to make that possible?
Yeah. So there's two parts to that. The first part is, so we've tripled in size along the way. So now we're, you know, we spend $35 million a year. I'm quick to say we raise $35 million each and every year. We have three sources of revenue: donor support, business revenues, and government funding. Look, only 5% of our budget is from government sources. So the way it works out, about $22 million is donor support, about $8-9 million is our business revenues, and the rest is government, all federal, state, county, city. It's been my frustration over these 10 years that I haven't been able to crack that nut and get more government revenues. But thankfully, we're blessed with a great many donors who support our mission. They see the value of having mentorship. Someone gave them a second chance. They see how we sort of take their money. We hire folks. We sort of pay people while they work on themselves. And then they are able to move their life forward.
Quick question on the donors. Did that significantly change from a decade ago? the percentage of each of those?
You know, it's all three have grown about the same in ratio from a decade ago. So along the way with raising that money, and again, we're generous donors, people would say to me, Tom, yeah, here, I'm going to donate this amount of money to you. But if you ever come up with a business idea where you can put your people to work and you need some capital to spend, come to me. And so I heard that more than once. So for the longest bit of time, every nickel we've raised went to the program side of what we're doing.
Right.
The business side was sort of starved of resources and capital. And so now, a number of years ago, 4 years ago, we started our Homeboy Venture and Jobs Fund. And what I want to do is model that legal entity after venture capital does, because back in the world I came from, hey, there's a lot of bets being placed on businesses. And
of course,
not that they all don't work out. And so why are people risking capital dollars on businesses that don't work out? If they're going to risk capital dollars, how about on a business that helps people along the way?
Yeah.
Is the way I think about it. And so we've now raised 12 of that $15 million just to be allocated towards business growth, acquiring new businesses, running new businesses. And thankfully, I have a sort of a board of directors, have an advisory board who understand how to invest in businesses and grow the business side of it.
But
that's our goal, is to create more job opportunities and quality jobs for our folks, because they leave Homeboy some after 18 months.
Right.
We need to land them into a quality job. And a good example is a number of years ago, now about 4 years ago, we acquired Homeboy Electronic Recycling, a recycling company, electronics. You know, that was about $500,000 of sales at the time. Now it's $3 million. Look to keep on growing it. Because after Homeboy, our folks need quality jobs. The minimum wage job doesn't allow them to sort of move their life forward without enough resources. So that's what we're looking to do as well.
That's incredible. Coming from the for-profit industry, has there any conversation or work been done about re-entry in other for-profit businesses from people coming from Homeboy?
Yeah. So what we're always looking, so we bring in more people than we can place in our own businesses. So, so we find felony friendly employers to help. And, you know, and part of that is the recognition that our folks have different struggles in life. And this is, to me, a big learning coming out of the business world now and the nonprofit world. There's two Americas. Now, no great insight there. It's just I'm sort of now seeing how it plays out. The America that we all live in, and as America of the poor and the demonized. And being poor in our society is so hard to get through and to even actually get to a job and to do a good job. Can I tell a story?
Yeah.
So one of our businesses is we have an artisan bakery. So we bake bread by hand. There's nothing better about breaking down barriers of two guys in rival gangs standing at the table, rolling dough, shoulder to shoulder, rival gangs, but they know they got to get a certain amount of bread baked each day. That breaks down those barriers, that starts causing positive relationships among them, because you can't demonize somebody in relationship with. All right, so that's our bakery. So we also do farmers markets, and so we sell our bread at various farmers markets around the city. So I remember within my first year of being a Homeboy, I was walking through the bakery, you know, management by walking around, and I overheard one of our best guys who, clients, trainees, we call them trainees, who goes out to the farmer's markets, George. I remember George asking the bakery manager if he can have the weekend off. You know, and now farmer's markets, weekends are the busiest days. And so manager said yes. And I went up to George's, you know, just to be friendly. Said, hey, what are you doing? In my mind, are you taking the kids away? You're going away for the weekend, that type of thing. He looks at me and says, no, what he's going to do is he's reporting in for the weekend. I gave him a strange look. I said, reporting in, what's that mean? Well, he was reporting into LA County Men's Central Jail because he had been in prison. He came out within that past year, and the amount of debt that he owed was high. And so here's the other crazy thing. These guys, men and women, come out of prison. The amount of money they owe is pretty amazing. Not just restitution costs, but court costs, parole officer costs, bailouts costs. I mean, it's like
I have a friend going through this right now.
It's just, and as a society, we think they're earning money in prison. They can come out and they have to use their money for housing and food to pay those costs. Yeah. So at the time, you can report into LA County jail and burn off the dollars you owe by spending 4 days in jail.
Really?
So I went home that Thursday thinking about that, thinking, that is a massively responsible thing to do. Because listen, he didn't go steal money to pay the debt. He knows he's got to pay the debt. He didn't go to his former gang and say,
borrow money because then he knew he would be indebted to the gang, right? He didn't go to a loan shark. He said, I'm going to do this the right way. I'm going to earn off the money. So he's going to report into jail. So I'm thinking all weekend. I said, wow, I'm thinking to myself, should I have like offered money? Should I? I mean, like, I didn't think fast enough on my feet at the time, but it's sort of, so I'm realizing it. So then I, you know, first thing Tuesday morning, I come back in and I make a beeline and I want to go find George and just, hey, just kind of say, hey, that was really good of you to do that. How'd it go? And so when I asked, how'd it go? I can see the stress on his face.
Mm.
And here's the thing. So he has, like a lot of the guys and men when come out, they work hard to get custody of their children. So he had custody of his two children, a 10-year-old and 8-year-old. And his caregiver, not his family members, not his gang, not his neighborhood, couldn't make it to watch his kids for that weekend. Oh, but he still reported into jail. He still had to report into jail. So here he left his 10-year-old and 8-year-old in the apartment on their own for 4 days. Can you imagine the stress a parent would be under in that situation and what they'd be thinking the whole time? Now, I'll quickly get to the end. It was okay. The kids were okay. Right? But the lesson, I say all that story to say a couple things. The rest of us in the privileged America, we sort of hear that story and our first instinct is the judge. Well, he should have borrowed the money. Well, he shouldn't have reported in jail. Well, he should have found somebody else. We can't put ourselves in that situation because the amount of choices is just so hard to make each and every day along the way. So A, not the judge, and the choice and the difficulty that the poor in our society have to live with are mightily that affect their jobs. And so that's the whole point about this is like we want to create quality jobs and we want more businesses to hire on our folks, but you have to provide a little more latitude, a little more support services around. You know, the poverty rate in America has been the same for 45 years. Hasn't changed. Narrowed down 12%. And what's to me amazing about Homeboys, I look back and look at this, is that Homeboy has a way of helping people lift them out of poverty, help them heal from their trauma, restitution, and then get resilient enough to take on what society throws at them and get a quality job and then move their family forward. That's how you get people out of poverty. And so part of writing the book and doing all these talks is to get the message out that I think businesses should lead the way of helping improve the poverty rate in America. And so for me, it's like this challenge. Hey, any business out there, dedicate 15% of your next hires to the working poor. And that's going to make a measurable impact on how we move forward as a society. But to do that is you have to also bring a little bit of these support services around, not as much as Homeboy, but a little bit more awareness, and it's all going to work out for you.
That would be incredible. I think something else that I think about all the time is how when you talk about poverty hasn't changed. We still have massive hunger issues. We have water issues in the United States. Like a lot of things, we still have massive homelessness issues. Like a lot of things haven't progressed over the past decades. And it's like, why is that not happening? And there's more nonprofits than ever. That's why I think it would be interesting to have that different leadership perspective come in, right? Where the venture fund, I mean, not to say that it couldn't have happened without you in some way, shape, or form, but the fact of that you were having those conversations and knew enough about it to get it started, to get it going, like that takes somebody being in the seat to have the conversations, then to nurture them, to know the people that can start to, like, that's a whole other project, right? Like, and you have to have that type of perspective sitting down at the table. So, listener, if this is you, I guess what I would say to the listener, and I would love your thought on this, is take a look at your board and see if there's something missing. Is there a specific use or experience or perspective that's missing at the table that you're not seeing that you think would be interesting to have? That could be like, that's a $15 million venture fund. Like that's unheard of. Right, in our space of something creative to do. And it's 13 different social enterprises, right?
That's correct.
Currently. Was there 13 a decade ago?
Nah, let's call it 8.
Okay.
Yeah. And some of them are small. So we go out, I mean, we have our business. We want to look, we do $10 million of business volume. Hopefully, we'll do $20 million in business volume in a few years, right?
Yeah.
About what's the next thing we're investing in? We're trying to do recycling apparel right now. And so, how do you change that around? So anyway, there's those ideas. But yes, you need on board, you need a bunch of different skill sets along the way. And and I think, you know, when people put business people on the board, they told them because they're either accounting type people or finance type people. We also need sort of more general operators.
that helps out. And like, I think the business world is full of good skilled people who care about our society, want to make society better, and they have a hard time figuring out how they can get involved. And so if nonprofit folks are listening, don't hesitate to go ask business people to get on your board along the way.
Yes. Yes. And I love specifically if you can approach somebody and say, I need you because of this.
Yeah, for sure.
So in your book, I do want to tout that. It's called The Homeboy Way. It was released last year. And it talks about counterintuitive business ideas that are changing lives for the better. And I want to, as we get towards the end of our conversation, what's an example of this that maybe other leaders that are listening can put into practice?
Let me jump right into one that's a more of a timely topic, but also hard to talk through, is this idea of hire the best person, be colorblind. And so a lot of this concept in corporate America is to be colorblind in hiring people. And I'm saying, you got to have a little more intentionality about looking at your workforce and your management team. You know, look, I learned this also in the for-profit world. Your management team needs to be as diverse as your workforce, right? And your workforce should be as diverse as your customer population. So similarly, nonprofit world, clients and frontline managers. And so to make that happen, you got to kind of be intentional about lifting up the diversity within your management team. My point is, let's not worry about being colorblind decisions. You need to be intentional, right? That's one example.
Yeah.
Another example is this concept of sort of, we didn't get on this, hugs and laughter, right? And, you know, I think what I love about homeboys, laughter and hugs. Like, I'm not a good hugger. I grew up in corporate America. All the rules, you don't hug, you don't comment on somebody's dress, you don't do any of those things, right? You dehumanize sort of this along the way. And I'm still not a good hugger, but I love getting hugs at homeboy, and it's about kinship, and it's truly about sharing in that sense. And so that kind of also touches upon, very importantly, what learn to homeboy is, you know, work with the individual. Don't worry about setting precedent. Right? And so in corporate America, you worry all the time. Well, if you do X for one employee, you got to do X for all employees. No, that's not really necessarily true. That's sort of a rule of thumb, but you don't have to do it that way. Right. And so how do you sort of say it's about how you help an individual grow within their team, be a manager, help them in their life? Obviously, everybody has struggles outside the workplace. Not that you got to bring all those struggles in the workplace, but if your workplace can help you through your outside struggles, you're getting a more loyal employee. And most for-profit organizations
absolutely
away from that totally. And what I've learned is, no, we can help out in many different ways.
Awesome. Those are great. Everyone go pick up The Homeboy Way. I am so excited to dive into it more. Melody, who connected us, sent me a teaser of it. And so I've read through a few, but not in enough time with having a 2-month-old currently. So my reading time is a little bit less than it used to be.
You have a book on tape, right? A digital book.
That's right. That's audio. Right. Exactly. So I wanted to ask you, speaking of professional development, we're talking about investing in our teams. What are you reading right now? Are you listening to podcasts or an audiobook for fun or professional development?
Yeah. So I just got back from a couple week vacation in Hawaii. And so I spend my time on vacation now at this point in my life, really almost like I was reading an article about sabbaticals where people kind of do deep contemplation and reading. So when I go on vacation, I do a lot of reading. And so I just read, I was hesitating a long bit of time, St. Teresa of Avila, her inner castle. It's about soul and the multiple levels of the soul. And I look at homeboy, I learned to really get on the spiritual path. And I've now been on this journey for the last decade. And obviously I learned that from Father Greg, but I also learned it from the homies. And what sort of amazed me is how so many of our folks come out of prison and they have strong spirituality. And that made sense to me in the privileged world I was living in before, but seeing how it plays out. So I figured if the homies, through all their trauma, are on this spiritual path, how can I learn by that? And so I go away and do my spiritual reading at the time. And so it was very good. I'm going to give you two books here. So it's Teresa of Avila's. It's about inner castle, spiritual soul. The other book I read while I was away, this is not so much going away, was the new book, Professor Desmond out of Princeton, on poverty. Really interesting calculation of poverty in America over the last 25, 40 years. Sort of what cements this sort of folks about staying in the level of poverty, and it's hard for them to jump out of poverty, which is definitely true. You know, to me, this whole thing about meritocracy, another thing about counterwave thinking about
Like, I was a big advocate coming to Homeboy of a meritocracy because I knew through my own hard work and ability, I moved ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Meritocracy really doesn't work for the poor people in our society. It's hard for them to move ahead as much as they want to work hard. And for the rest of us in our society to wag our fingers saying, just work hard and you'll get ahead, that doesn't work either. So a book on poverty is great, and a book on your soul is also good.
Love it. It was actually interesting you mentioned that. I'm going to mess up the title of it. Did you see the Netflix series? I think Obama was helping to produce it. Working America?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it yet. I think it just came out.
Yeah. I just started to watch like the first episode, but very similar to the context of what you're talking about. So I would, suggest watching it. And then last question, which is always a fun one, is called Ask and Receive. Is there one thing that you would like to ask for help or support on from the listeners?
I wouldn't be a nonprofit CEO if I didn't ask for financial support for the organization and donors. But that being said, that always goes with the territory. You know, it's really, look, every nonprofit, if a lot of your audiences are nonprofits, it's hard work being a nonprofit leader, particularly a human services organization. You know, I've recognized our team is really phenomenal about mentoring and helping people get out of gang life. And so much of our team takes on the trauma of the people we work with. They feel the pain. They absorb the pain. They put calming waters onto the fire of somebody to help out. It's hard work. And so if you're in that world, I want to thank you for the work you do. Know that you have kindred spirits out there doing the work. And so what I'm asking is sort of take a step back and sort of revel in the work you do and find joy in it. Because it gets to be taxing. And in my sort of quiet dialogues with Father Greg, I've come to learn it's really about striving for joy, which provides that thriving workplace. And it's a mindset shift. And once you can find joy in everybody, you find joy through people. And that's what kind of keeps the work going.
What a beautiful way to wrap up the conversation. It has been a joy speaking with you. And I hope the next time I'm in LA that I will definitely stop by.
Absolutely.
One of the restaurants or cafes and say hello. But this was wonderful. Tom, what's the best way for people to get your book and reach out to you?
Homeboyindustries.org is our website. The book is The Homeboy Way. There's a homeboyway.org as well. It's on Amazon as well. So buy it via Amazon.
You can get the next day, Amazon Prime.
You get the next day and we move up in the rankings. The whole point of the book is, look, it's about getting the message of Homeboy out there. And this Father Greg writes beautiful books. We get Father Greg's books first. But then if you want a little like a more of a businessy angle of how do you run an organization, my 10 years at Homeboy and how that has played out.
It's fascinating. This was your sneak peek. Now you got to go get the book for all the secrets, all the secret sauce. Amazing. Tom, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Can you tell I love talking all things digital? To make this show better, I'd be so grateful for your feedback. Leave a review, take a screenshot of this episode, share it on Instagram stories, and tag Positive Equation with one E so I can reshare and connect with you.